And welcome, everyone. This is Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice. It's March 20th, and you are listening to Here We Stand, the voice of the resistance and the Republic of Canada. And for over 7 years, we've been broadcasting this program to help organize people to reclaim their minds and their world. And this, of course, today is the second anniversary, entering the third year of the COVID police state, and we have that police state to thank for this incredible growth in awareness and organization all over the planet. It's often been said that we have our enemies to thank for showing us who we are. And that's certainly the case now. The last 2 years has been seen a monumental growth in the ability of people to fight back, and not simply in retaliation or in response to the evil done to them, but recognizing that that evil is coming from ourselves as well. And that's been a lot of the focus of our show, is looking at ourselves in the mirror. And we're going to continue to do that today in a very activist kind of way. The Republic of Canada has been spreading, especially over the last couple of years, into a very grassroots type of movement across Canada and around the world. We've inspired common law republics now in 9 other countries. And one of the things that we've noticed recently, especially in the belt through southern Ontario, is a lot of people are realizing that the genocide and crimes of the past are very much connected now to the pharmaceutical-run genocide striking us everywhere through the COVID police state. The title of today's show is 2 Centuries of Pharmaceutical-Run Genocide in Canada and Globally, Looking at Evidence and What to Do About It. You can follow our work, murderbydecree.com, republicofkanata.org, that's K-A-N-A-T-A.org, and for you newcomers, a lot of my books are listed on the murderbydecree.com site, along with the work of the Republic at republicofkanada.org. Now, today, we're going to feature an interview I did with Owen Lucas about that very topic, especially a news item recently that the United Church in London, Ontario, the Anglican Church, no doubt the United Church as well, in London, Ontario, is requiring that anyone who comes to worship has to get the COVID shot. Not surprisingly, because the Anglican Church and the Crown of England are heavy investors in GlaxoSmithKline and other big pharma companies that have now been indicted and convicted of crimes against humanity. Well, we're going to be talking over that today and hashing over how this genocide, past and present, can be overcome. We've shown how to fight it on the ground. And the interview today will get into the nuts and bolts of that. But before we start that, I wanted to share something that I came across recently from one of my good buddies, the poet Walt Whitman, who was writing in America at the time of the Civil War. And I hope you'll be inspired by these words. I know I am. How the problem begins with us and can be resolved with us as well. He writes, "I see flashing that this nation is only you and me. Its power, wars, weapons, and struggles are you and me, as are its pure glowing moments. Its crimes, lies, thefts, adulteries are you and me. Its government, its endless gestations of sin and babble are but you and me and what we choose to engender. So I dare not shirk any part of myself, nor any part of this nation, good or bad. For I am for those who have never been mastered by the times, for those men and women whom laws, orders, conventions can never master. I am for those who walk abreast with the world and with all its people, who welcome and inaugurate one to welcome and inaugurate all. I will not be repelled by irrational things. I will make empire and pomp defer to reason and virtue. That is what I've learned from America, and America from me. Ah, liberty, now weapons are everywhere aimed at your heart, yet I see you serenely give birth to immortal children. I see you spreading like a great mantle to cover the world. Then courage yet, my brother, my sister, keep on, for liberty is to be served whatever occurs. Nothing is quelled by failure or by the indifference and fear of the people or by any betrayal or by the brushes of power, statutes, police, and jail cells. What we are and what we believe waits latent forever in every land. It invites no one, promises nothing, sits in calmness and light, knows no discouragement, waits patiently for its moment. For songs of insurrection are the sweetest, and I am the sworn poet of every dauntless rebel the world over. And he going with me leaves peace and routine behind and stakes his life to be lost at any moment. So even now, as the battle rages with many in alarm and defeat and the tyrant triumphs, or supposedly triumphs, even as the named and unnamed heroes pass on and lie forgotten, their causes sleep. Even as the eyes of young men and women droop in despair, even then, liberty has not gone from the land, nor has the tyrant come into possession of it. For when liberty leaves a place, it is the last to go. When there are no more memories of heroes and martyrs, and when all life and the souls of men and women are discharged from the earth, only then shall liberty, or the idea of liberty, be discharged, and the tyrant come into full possession. And so courage, revolter, revoltress, for until all ceases, neither must you cease. Even in your defeat and dismay shall you find greatness through the eternity held in your breast. As you walk free and unchained, unaffected by loss, by indifference, and by indifference of time and circumstance, proving yourself equal to all those compassionators and restorers of mankind, journeying forever until you make your ineffaceable mark and you saturate time and eras, so that the men and women of races, ages to come, may prove brethren and lovers as we are. That's Walt Whitman from Leaves of Grass, written just before and during the American Civil War, and carry that as an inspiration today, brothers and sisters. The problem may come from us, but that means the problem can be resolved by us. Within our own sovereignty, with no authority over us except conscience and the Creator as we understand them to be, the God of nature who stands sovereign over all things and all people, and under whom tyrants fall away under the great light of reason and virtue. This is Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice. Enjoy the interview today. Carry it on. We'll be back next week. Stay strong and stay clear.
Hi, Kev. How's things? Can you hear me?
Good day. Yes, I can.
Like a scratch record. Wow, it doesn't stop, does it? It keeps on coming.
No, that's right. Yeah.
So you sent me a really interesting list here of topics for an extra one this week. Let's just start with number one, shall we? The policy of Anglican churches in Canada of requiring that only worshippers be vaccinated. So very similar to other corporations. So, you know, it is a corporation, right? There's coercion, which is the terminology of the Nuremberg Code, with regards to spirituality and worship in the Anglican Church. Is that just in Canada or is that worldwide?
Well, it appears to be starting in Canada, and there's more to it than meets the eye. We got this last week from people who live around London, Ontario, and that's already a hotspot for a lot of these crimes. As you know, the Anglican Church ran that death camp called the Mashhole, you know, the Mohawk Institute in Brantford, not too far down the road.
That's Ontario, not too far from Ottawa.
West of Ottawa, but it's southern Ontario, yeah. And we heard from people there that the churches around London are now not only requiring that people be vaccinated to attend, but they get a certain vaccine from the local Anglican-affiliated hospital, Victoria Hospital in London. Now, this hospital, we did some research, and the drug they're pushing is, of course, put out by GlaxoSmithKline, which is unusual because most of the vaccines in Canada are not from GSK. They're from Moderna or Pfizer. So we dug in a bit more into this. And sure enough, as you know, Queen Elizabeth, Emma Walmsley, the head of GSK, and Justin Welby, the Archbishop of Canterbury, are now facing arrest warrants because of their involvement of using children in drug testing experiments. And
Can we just do a really quick recap, Kev, for people who haven't heard about this mushhole before? This is from the residential schools, which is basically death camp when you look at the numbers of deaths of children that were in these camps. And the mushhole is this absolutely mind-bending, horrific punishment whereby children were put in a pit, often in the freezing cold of winter, until they basically just perished of cold. And the word mush is a reference to the sort of fleshy swamp that was down there because of the number of corpses. Right. Is that pretty much it?
That's right. It's all on murderbydecree.com.
And there have been no arrests.
That's right. The Mudhole Shoal was the first so-called residential school in Canada run by the Crown of England. We did a dig there. We found the remains. As a matter of fact, here are some of the buttons right there off the dig, the buttons off school uniforms. You know, and In the course of it, we found that these deaths, again, were because of drug testing experiments that have been done on native children in the very same hospital now where they want all the Anglican Church members to report to get the shot. So it's when you look into the background, the connection between GlaxoSmithKline and Anglican Church, it runs very deep. It goes back over 150 years. And one of the guys who set up, it was called Henry Wellcome. He was an Englishman who started up a thing called the Wellcome Trust, right. And they set up hospitals all over the world to use human beings in drug testing experiments. You know, West Coast Native Indians, the Cherokee Indians in the Midwest, they were using them to test their diphtheria vaccines. In South Africa, all over Africa, this Wellcome Trust, which was then bought up by the GlaxoSmithKline. So you see the connection here with the Crown and this genocidal drug company.
And this Wellcome Trust still operates hospitals to this day, and it's connected with the injection rollout now, right?
Oh, that's right. They're also involved over in China in, you know, the 70,000 people every year who are killed for their organs. GSK, Novartis, Pfizer, they're all employed there by the Chinese government to test out tissue samples from potential organ, they're not donors, they're involuntarily, you know,
Kev, could you just repeat that?
They're all deeply involved in this modern-day genocide.
We lost you on the audio for a second there, Kev. Could you just rewind a bit and repeat that section again?
Just that GlaxoSmithKline, like Novartis and Pfizer and all the others, are deeply involved with organ trafficking in China. The over 70,000 people who die every year for their organs, these companies go in and are used to test out tissue samples from these, you know, people whose organs are to be slated for, you know, for trafficking and all that. So you see, this genocide goes on. And when you trace the history, it not only goes back to this Henry Wellcome guy, but these companies were all deeply involved with the Nazis as well. And in the death camps. So it's the fact that the Anglican Church now is now using their own people sitting in the pews to test out these murderous drugs. It's an example of how high and how deep this runs, right?
Well, how about also that as a to run with a theory that because they haven't made the profits that perhaps they were hoping to, that, you know, a lot of these injections are now getting destroyed because the uptake is dropping off fast, right? So they're looking perhaps to make compulsory wherever they can. People having, because it's a death industry, right? You know, the history you're talking about here is, you know, documents and categorizes all this this money making through the death industry, and so if things are dropping off, then they're looking to impose where they can
and naturally their own people are reliable crop of guinea pigs because they're already brainwashed very much into the church system. But the thing to realize that, and which not many people are saying, is that this is a continuity of a genocide that's gone on for centuries. It's just the latest expression of it. And, it's kind of ironic when you look at the, just do a bit of background corporate research, Pfizer, GlaxoSmithKline, Merck, all of the big drug companies, they've been fined over $16 billion in the last 10 years in court cases where they caused death, they caused disease, they obstructed justice, they were defrauding the public. These are criminally convicted bodies, not only for genocide, but just everyday fraud and financial indiscretion and murder. And yet people line up, you know.
Sure. And not only are they avoiding incrimination and conviction, but they're also getting their asses covered with indemnity, right? So anybody who comes forward and says, hey, look, you know, this is what's happened, you know, give me insurance or let's do a lawsuit because of the damage and injury that's caused, they've got complete cover by the authorities, right?
Well, they have for 40 years. The Reagan administration in the 80s first brought in legislation saying, drug companies are exempt from prosecution, that they're indemnified under the law, which, of course, the churches are, too, for the genocide. That's why they know, the Anglican Church knows, they can push murderous drugs on their own people and there'll never be a legal consequence because they're already indemnified. I mean, they're just down the road from when they did these kind of murderous inoculations and killing on native kids. And, you know, it's all the same area and all the same crime carrying on. And so, you know, what I often say to people is, it's not only in your own backyard, but it's striking you now. It's this inevitable blowback that happens when you're part of a genocidal system, right?
It can only be called a death cult, right? Because not only are they protected, but it's actively encouraged. And you look at, you know, these documentation like Agenda 21 and Agenda 30, and they look to reduce the global population down to 500 million, half a billion. And, you know, we're seeing it. We're seeing the statistics and the factual information coming through these deaths via these, you know, enormous corporations that are being not only covered, but encouraged to roll out their genocide. You know, when are people going to give themselves a slap and a cold shower?
Well, awakening to something and acting on it are two very different things. And, we've talked before about that, about the difficulty people have of imagining outside the present box. I just saw today there was people who have known about my work for many years. They know all this stuff, and yet they're still calling on people to write to their members of parliament. I'm saying, hello, aren't you aware of the fact that not only is it a criminally convicted body that has no authority, but what is that going to do? They're all employees of Big Pharma. You know, right. You might as well write to the head of Pfizer and ask him to change his opinion, right?
Yeah, sure. The one I do is, you know, you might as well write to Jimmy Savile and say, can you be nice to children, please? You know, same thing, right?
Well, right.
Okay, so
go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to go down the list, unless you had another point to make.
Well, I just really want to flag to people who are hearing this for the first time, murderbydecree.com, because if you go in there, a lot of these examples of how this has happened in the past, the eyewitnesses' testimonies and that, but there's one especially important section, Appendix 10, that's on page 389, if you go to murderbydecree.com. It's about Anglican missionary called John Sheepshanks, and in the 1860s, he went all through British Columbia at the... He was an employee of not only the Anglican Church, but the Puget Sound Agricultural Company that had already bought up all this land where the Chilcotin Indians were living on.
Okay. So is that across the border? That's from West Coast BC and also Washington State, USA, right?
No, it's central British Columbia now.
Okay.
And it's the Chilcotin people. Sheepshanks went around in the summer of 1864, and he kept a diary about this that's been published. And he described all of the natives he was inoculating about smallpox. Three quarters of those natives were dead by the fall. And then his corporate buddies bought up all the land. They had preempted it, knowing that he was about to kill off these people. Well, Sheepshanks gets rewarded. He becomes a bishop of Norwich and permanent seat in the House of Lords in London until 1909, right? And he even wrote a book about this. He admitted he did it in this book. You know, germ warfare to wipe out all the central British Columbia Indians, Anglican Church employee. I mean, you know, this stuff is right in the history, right in the tradition, right?
As I was reading your book, Mouth of the Cannon, I remember Sheepshanks, and I remember that section about the inoculation figures and you know, how it was very much connected. And it seemed to me, you know, a complete repeat today with the COVID injections of what was going on there, that perhaps it was the injections that were doing the injuries and the deaths, as opposed to the so-called Mother Nature illness, right?
Oh yeah, well, it's like with using tuberculosis as the cause of death. You take children and you put the healthy and sick together, let them get killed off by TB, never treat them, and then you can say, well, it's just an act of nature because a lot of people get TB, right? That's a cover, the mask over mass murder, right?
And the stats, it was in the 90s, right? The number of the population in BC on the West Coast had been culled by over 90%. Was it?
Oh, yeah.
Is my memory right?
It went in just two generations, it went from about, anthropologists figure, about 2 million people lived on the West Coast. It was very rich in resources. It created a huge population in some areas. It was down to 20,000. By 1920. So that's about a 99% wipeout level.
And we're looking at, therefore, a culture of Big Pharma and a history of Big Pharma killing people. You know, you think also about the Second World War, where, you know, the chemicals were coming from these corporations to wipe out in the death camps, right? You know, there's time and time again, we see throughout history that these Big Pharma corporations are responsible for mass genocide, you know, periodically through history. And you think about the arms industry, and, you know, they need wars in order to make profits and justify their corporate entity, you know, existing. Similarly, it looks like with Big Pharma that, you know, this, they have to roll out this pestilence plague once every so often to create their market industry, whatever you want to call it.
Right. And of course, the churches are the greatest cover to do that with. You know, churches have been the major instrument of genocide that in Western European history and North American history. Here's another example. I just want to focus on this Henry Welcombe guy because it's so interesting. So in other words, one of the founders of modern day GlaxoSmithKline, he went to a place called Metlakatla, and that was in the northwest part of British Columbia, right where the Chinese are taking over now around Prince Rupert. And as an anthropology student, I read all the time about this Metlakatla. It was the Anglican Church went in and set up a church-run native village where they gave the natives all sorts of freedoms, but they were corralled there. They could never leave the village. Well, it turns out the reason it was is Henry Welcombe was behind it. He was funding Metlakatla because he needed a contained population to test out their drugs on. And he did the same thing. He actually married the daughter of a British physician called Dr. Thomas Barnardo, who took the street children of London and put them in special homes for slum children where they could do, guess what, medical experimentation on them. So it's all in the family, right? And, you know, he's lauded in the books as this guy who was on the side of the natives. No, he was using them to create really concentration camps, controlled hospital environments to medically test out, you know, all of these drugs, everything from diphtheria to tuberculosis to birth control devices. They use them. They would put experimental IUDs on native women and they'd get killed by them. You know, so these were like nasty, like experimentation camps going back well into the 19th century. And, you know, GSK is the inheritor of all that. So that's reason enough to arrest Emma Walmsley right there and the Archbishop of Canterbury and Elizabeth Windsor.
So Barnardo is just rewinding a function. Barnardo's is a famous you know, childcare organization over here. Is it international? You have it too, right?
Same one, set up by Dr. Thomas Barnardo, and he was actually, there were charges brought against him for his medical murder of children, but there were slum kids in London, so who cared, right? But if you read some of the alternative history, you'll see that this guy was notorious killer.
And this seems a template too, that, you know, if you can isolate children, so you know, you hear it with the Catholic orphanages, right? Oh, these children are born out of wedlock, so you know, we have to take them off because it's so shameful, blah 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 blah. What's actually going on is they're collecting their commodities, right, in order to fuel their the corporate enterprise.
Well, when you look at the history of child trafficking, especially in the Catholic Church, no wonder they have a quote pro-life anti-abortion policy, because they need newborn babies to traffic, you know, either for their organs or we talked about this before, the baby for adoption protocol in the hospitals and Catholic hospitals all over the world. They target young Catholic women who are pregnant. They brainwash them to say, you know, you can't raise your child properly, give the church your baby. And then they have a list of adoption agencies who need kids. And so they fill that demand, right? You know, for children. So it's a huge baby trafficking, human trafficking industry. And the churches are the main, you know, kind of tip of the spear of that assault, right?
And just before we get to Glaxo and Emma Walmsley, I've just been spending the last couple of weeks looking at child protection stuff. And that template, you know, that used to be, or perhaps, you know, still is an operation, but it's been taken up as well by the social services, certainly over here and I think around the world, where they have phrases like potential or future emotional harm, which is a pre-crime, a crime that might or might not happen in the future. Right. And then they justify taking children off these, you know, economically deprived families. And then similarly, you know, where do they go? Where do they end up? Thousands, tens of thousands go missing every year, right?
Well, you've got to ask, why are they economically deprived in the first place, right? Like, why are natives sitting on the street corner drunk? I mean, it's because it's a history of deliberate impoverishment and genocide. And it's all good business. You know, last year, GlaxoSmithKline's profit rate was 67%. I mean, you know, they're number six in the world now. They've got all of these cornered markets. You know, how people can stand by and know all this, and then even if they don't line up for the shot, it's people say, well, do we really have the right to go and seize these vaccines and arrest these people? Well, not only right, obligation. You've got to do this under law, right?
We're all on the reservation now, right? The world is a reservation.
Literally, it worked on the Indians, so why wouldn't it work on us? You know, I mean, it's all the same tactic. They, you know, the technology now is more sophisticated, especially over the internet, to put only one version of reality that, you know, but, and I think that that's the bigger question of how do you really fight back when the information, people's view of reality is all controlled by the very criminals we're opposing.
Right. Massive inversion, hypocrisy, you know, to the extreme.
Yeah.
Number three, the state of the hunting of the three W's, Windsor, Walmsley, and Welby. Okay, so should we start with Welby, seeing as we got to the Anglican Church? So he's the head of the Anglican Church in globally, just like Windsor is right. of the Crown globally.
Yep. All three of them have been completely incommunicado. You don't see them in public. You might see their doubles, but they are hidden because they know that it's the same reason the British government, Boris Johnson, canceled the Plan B measures of the COVID rollout the same day the Commonwealth sheriffs arrived in England with his arrest warrants, because there had been protests of tens of thousands of people in the streets, and they had visions of all these people armed with arrest warrants knocking on the door of Buckingham Palace. And I should give the address. GlaxoSmithKline House is in Brentford in Middlesex, 980 Great West Road. Well, people have the right to go in there now and shut down the place. You know, and arrest anyone complicit in these crimes. So they knew that, and that has that effect, right? When people go beyond words to saying, no, we have the law now on our side, right?
100%. So that address in Middlesex, is that's the head office, or is that the warehouse stockpiling of the weapons? Or both?
That's their corporate headquarters is 980 Great West Road, Brentford, Middlesex. And Emma Walmsley actually lives in the suburbs of London, where people have been looking for her, but they can't find them. They're literally vanished. No one in the company seems to know where they are. So, you know, they're incommunicado right now, hoping this thing will blow over. Right?
Probably in a bunker in China.
Very likely.
So that's Walmsley and Welby. How about Windsor? I just saw her. I did see her shaking hands with Trudeau a couple of days ago.
Yeah. Well, that of course is that other story we talked about in the previous interview about Trudeau is helping the Chinese set up basically their own self-governing area of Western British Columbia, the West Coast of British Columbia. And, you know, Trudeau has formally handed over authority in the area to China, and he was getting, you know, kind of quote royal assent for that act. Don't forget, the Crown of England is a big investor in big pharma as well. They're allies with China. It's like the whole arrangement now is that China's taken over North America with the assistance of Russia, who is keeping America occupied in Ukraine while it happens, kind of in a nutshell. And so, you know, like the Vatican, the Crown of England has had to choose what direction they're going to jump. And, you know, I think it's obvious that the movement is east, right, with right. everybody.
Yeah, well, I find it fascinating that the bread baskets, you know, did we say this last time? Ukraine, Canada, and Australia are being right. closed down, you know, perhaps in response to, you know, the Oceania, the Pacific Rim, and the Atlantic being the threat, in inverted commas, to the top level of the pyramid, you know, the high-ranking levels of the cult. And did you say that the Windsors are major stockholders of Glaxo? And how does Glaxo fit in with the other? Is that a sort of pyramid with AstraZeneca, Pfizer on the peg below Glaxo?
Do they forget they're all subsidiaries of two big investment firms, the Vanguard Group and BlackRock, and they own controlling interest in all of the major pharma companies. They have assets of $16.5 trillion. And so really it's their machinations that you could look at and their relationship to China. Well, of course, BlackRock has a long tradition in China. You know, it's like they're like with the Vatican money, the trillions in the Vatican Bank, it's moving east. And, you know, that's the new center of power. I think in 50 years, you're going to see China slash the corporatocracy running the world, with Russia and Europe maybe allied as their opposition, because, you know, Putin is in a weaker position than China now, and they're exploiting that to keep America occupied while they take over the West Coast.
Right. The military and industrial complex will keep these skirmishes at the borders of the continental blocks going, yeah, to maintain their profits, as these big pharma corps are doing with these viruses, pestilence, or whatever you want to call them. Number four, the direct actions being planned against Anglicans in Canada. So this sounds exciting.
It's happening as we speak, actually. People in London have already gone into churches and have done sit-downs. They said this property is forfeited, telling people not to donate money, not to go to church, not to take the shots. They're also picketing the local hospitals. And what's interesting about this Victoria Hospital in London, Ontario, there's a tunnel system running from there to the local Catholic church and hospital. And as far back as the 1920s, like for a good century, there's documented reports of this is where children were taken for experimentation and other heinous things. London was named by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police years ago as one of the chief child trafficking networks, because ironically, it was the center of the Underground Railway coming up from during the Civil War years in America. The Underground Railway would stop in London, and then blacks would kind of fan out into Ontario, because by then the British Empire had abolished slavery. But that network was then taken over by the church, and under the guise of, you know, humanitarian work, they used those tunnel systems, right, to do a lot of their crimes at the Mushhole, and other places like it. So, I mean, it's that whole, you know, it's an interesting part of the world, because my ancestors who came from England, the Annetts, they settled just west of there. And that Philip Anna, my great-great-great-grandfather, took up arms. They went to London to try to overthrow the crown. There was the attempt in York, which is now Toronto, in Quebec, and in London, Ontario, to overthrow the crown. But their forces were scattered and they got defeated. But that whole area has been kind of like the center of the struggle. And yet you ask your average Canadian, and that memory of it has been totally wiped clean, you know. So this is, in a good way, a reviving about that whole lost history, right?
Right. It's not in the school curriculums, but people are talking about it now, right? It's hot topic.
Well, I should plug my book. I wrote a book about that. One of them, Land of Liberty, it's called, on Amazon. And it's a work of fiction, not really fiction. It's a novel, but it's based on my Annett family history, past, present, and future. And it's based on that part of the world. The crown really wanted to hold on to that because they were afraid of the Americans coming up after the War of 1812 and grabbing that area. The rebellion in 1837 had a lot of support from farmers who were displanted Americans who didn't like the British Empire, and they wanted to get rid of it. So that whole area has always been, you know, it's like in British Columbia, they poured in a lot of resources to keep up the Americans. And so that's where a lot of these crimes could happen, because everyone was looking the other way, worried about the Yankees. And in the background, they were doing all this mass murder. Right?
Yeah. I find it fascinating that, you know, there's that, constitution and the aspect of liberty. You know, America is built on getting away from these ancient regimes, if you like, and just across the border from, you know, some of the biggest, the most heavily populated parts of the US, you've got that crown capital right there, right, Ottawa. It's just sitting there like a, you know, like a predator.
Well, it's funny. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to go back to the the underground, the subterranean networks. You know, this also seems a characteristic of, you know, Sun Tzu says know your enemy. You know, as you were talking about it, what popped into my head was the catacombs under Paris, right? And then, you know, you can go right back into history. And there seems that there's always these subterranean networks of tunnel systems, you know, that are sort of covert, not really known, you know, sort of mythical in a way. But they certainly exist. Just down the road here in West Wales, Premiership, we've got a disused military train track that just goes into the cliff and who knows where it ends up, right? You know, subterranean right. stuff everywhere.
Well, you know, the very fact they have to hide it like that means it's not lawful and it's not good because, you know, they operate in the shadows all the time. And also the shadow in our own mind, you know, like part of the, anyone can believe that this is true based on their own common sense and knowledge. And yet we shove that down. We don't want to admit that we're really part of a murderous system that's been spanning centuries. And that's what's why people who just act like COVID is some recent nasty thing they're doing, they're confused by it. Why do they keep doing this to us? Well, know your history and you're armed, you know, to what you're part of, and then you can react in a different way than simply fear, right?
Yep. Next one, number five, the connection to the Mushhole mass grave and residential school and our campaign to unearth it. So the buttons you showed us early, that's a reference to this one, right?
That's right. And, you know, 10 years ago, right now, it was February, March 2012. That's when the dig was being shut down. We had been invited a year before that to come in by nine traditional elders of the Mohawk Nation and said, we know there's children in that ground. We'll take you to them. We want to bring them home. And so what was interesting was for the first time, even the state-funded puppet chiefs were on board with doing the dig. There was so much support for it that they had to go along. So for a few months, we had the ground penetrating radar. We had the eyewitnesses taking us to the site. And it's a really chilling spot on the back of the school, which is still standing. You can still see on the bricks graffiti of children saying, help me. My name is Sadie. You know, right near that underground cistern where they put the children and they turned to mush. All of this stuff, and the ground is heaped up to the right because they brought in the bulldozers to cover the graves. And we went in there and dug, and on the very day we began, we found these bones, we found buttons. The Smithsonian Institute, a guy called Don Ortner, he said, these are definitely human remains. He offered to come up and help, then he died. Then the government came in a big way and shut down the dig. They bought people into silence. The chiefs, you know, started the typical kind of smear campaign on me. And the whole thing was wiped out of the memory of people. And yet, at the same time, what happened was we found evidence in London, England, that there had been a very long tradition of crime at that place. It's run by a place called the New England Missionary Society, the New England Company. And I think they still have an office in London, England. And several people went over there to research it, and one of them died when they were over there, when they began to access the stuff. Like everyone who investigates a Mushhole or Don Ortner in the Smithsonian, they just die all of a sudden, right? And there was a woman called Leona Moses, who was a Mohawk woman, worked for the Anglican diocese, and said they found stuff on those archives that would bury the church, evidence of planned murder going back a century and a half, these experiments, all of this stuff.
The archives in London, England?
Not only there, but in a place called Huron College in London, Ontario, which is right near this church where they're pushing the vaccines on their Anglican parishioners. And Huron College has all of these documents. Leona Moses, again, was going to go public with it. Her house burns down. All of this evidence she had disappears. And then a month later, she dies of, quote, a heart attack, right? So there's this body count of anyone related to exposing in the Mushhole. And of course, they couldn't touch me because I had such a high profile. I was on TV and other things talking about this. But everyone around me, bang, 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 was being taken out or killed, right? And we got a court affidavit allowing us to go into the Huron Diocese, Huron College records. And again, then the police showed up and shut that down. It was like such a farce at every level, right?
What was their excuse for shutting it down?
They didn't give an excuse. It was a church. The church had the right to their own records. You know, the Canadian government said to the churches, we won't allow lawsuits to be brought against you on the condition that you fully disclose all of your records. And they said, oh, yeah, we'll disclose. And then they didn't. They buried all their records, and the government let them get away with it. So the church is a power unto itself. And Fred Hiltz, he was the Archbishop of Toronto, Bob Bennett, the bishop, they actually told their employees, they got an order from the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, who's the guy named in the arrest warrant, to destroy any evidence that might implicate the royal family or anybody in the system, because they, in effect, they knew the Dutch and the British royal families were coming over there to the Mushhole to get kids and to leave again. That's being documented by eyewitnesses and others. So this Mushhole is the scene of the crime in a huge way, and it's just down the road from all this stuff going on in London, right?
So just to recap here, Welby, Archbishop of Canterbury, and the Dutch royal family documented first-hand witness evidence connecting them to the murders.
Directly. And, you know, like during World War II, the Dutch royal family came over to Canada after Holland was taken over by the Nazis. But there was a law passed in Canada allowing the Dutch, like the British royal family, absolute immunity from any Canadian law. And we had a former doctor who worked at the hospital near the Mushhole saying that it was common knowledge that the Dutch Queen Wilhelmina and others in the Dutch royal family were coming and taking native children, just like Queen Elizabeth did in Kamloops.
Right. So Canada's like the sports venue, if you like. They come over and they commit their horrific, deviant, pervert crimes on these children.
Well, they farm
away from home.
They farm children. It's a resource base. And one of the resources is children, right?
Just going back to the start of that section, you said you mentioned the bulldozing. Was that part of the cover-up?
Oh, yeah. We even have, there was a guy, Geronimo Henry. He was a native guy. He was a funny old guy. He was in the 70s, but he made a living being an Elvis impersonator. So he had these long sideburns and tried to make him look like Elvis. But anyway, he told me about when he was a young boy, he saw them taking out the children at night and burying them in the woods, exactly where we dug and found the bones later and the buttons. And he said the bulldozers came in and piled up the dirt right over the graves to the right of where that cistern was. And sure enough, when we did the first ground penetrating radar survey, it's like a lawnmower. You push along the ground and it gives you a subsurface X-ray of what's there. Okay. I remember Clint King, the operator of this GPR unit, said to me, there has been massive soil dislocation here, 10, 20 feet piled up. It's very abnormal. Obviously, they're recovering something, right?
Mass grave.
Oh, mass graves of children all over there. Eyewitnesses, the forensic evidence, the documents, everything you need in a court of law to prove it. And it was proved in our court, in the court of public opinion. And yet people are acting now like it never happened, right?
And so there was a court convened especially for that.
That was the first International Common Law Court of Justice trial that deposed Benedict. One in 2012, 2013. I was the advisor to the prosecutor. I took all this evidence from Canada, including the evidence from the Mushhole, gave it to the prosecutor, and that formed a big chunk of the evidence that convicted, you know, Elizabeth and Benedict. All these people who were involved in the Catholic and Anglican involvement in the Mushhole was severe. You know, we had police accredited psychics come to the building and touch it, and they got all these impressions of children being sacrificed, of priests in red robes back in the 1800s conducting sacrificial ceremonies in the sub-basement area. You know, if you look at the base of the school, you can still see an archway, the top of an archway, like it's a door, covered by all that dirt that was piled up. And so there was a subterranean area, and eyewitnesses described being taken down in there and seeing all these things. So, you know, it's just more of the same, right?
Right. Similarly in Kamloops, right? I remember you saying that there was a psychic approved for the Kamloops, 10 children murdered 10th of October 1964 as well, right? Is there any way that people could access the statements of, you know, fascinating people like these psychics?
Oh, it's murderbydecree.com. It's a big book. It's like 400 pages long. And in this day and age, people want a 3-second answer. They want brief, a little concise thing they can read. You got to do the slogging through the evidence and read all this stuff. A lot of the statements are buried in there. I can read out some of them if you like, but the point is people need to do their own reading, and then it's very convincing what you find in there, right?
That's one of the few I haven't got on my shelf is Murder by Decree. It's on my Christmas list. So that investigative approved psychic, was it the same one in Ontario as it was in BC, or is there a few of them?
It was. Yeah. Her name is Yvonne Fanton, She lived on Vancouver Island. She's retired now, but she was public along with me and other people doing all this stuff. Yvonne was used by the RCMP on Vancouver Island. She has the ability to literally go and point to a hill and say, they're buried there, go dig. And every time she does, they find them, right?
And so those 10 children at Kamloops, she were the one that she energetically located them, right?
Yep. We took her up to Dead Man's Creek, which is where William Coombs said he saw the children taken. Now, a background for people who don't know, William Coombs, who had worked in our network, was a boy at the Kamloops Catholic School. October 10th, 1964, Queen Elizabeth and Philip showed up, and the records show they were in Canada at that time on a royal visit. And they went to a picnic at a place called Dead Man's Creek, about 10 kilometers west of Kamloops. And William says they were given lemonade and that made them pass out. They were drugged. But before he passed out, he saw the queen and the prince take 10 children away. And those children were never seen again. Well, we took Yvonne to that spot, and she walked around, and then she said, oh, no, yeah, they were over there. They were killed the same day. And their bodies were aligned in a kind of cultic, a weird configuration. So she believed it was a cultic killing. Add up all the numbers, they all equal 10. 10th month, 10th day, 1964, 10 children. Not only 10 children, but seven boys and three girls,
right,
which if you read in the book of Job, is the number of Job's children who were killed by God to test Job's faith, right? So it's all cultic. Right.
So what was the configuration? In my mind, it would fit with an inverted pentagram, 5 points, two children.
She made reference to she made reference to them being in a pointed configuration, but I can't remember her exact description. I'd have to go through my notes and find that. But she was very clear that it happened that day and they were killed, throats cut and aligned in a certain way, and then the blood was consumed in the usual cannibalism.
She had visions. She had visions of all this.
Yep.
And is there, so you say Celtic, is that Druidic? I'm just thinking, is there a connection here with
No, Celtic, not Celtic. I don't want to disparage my ancestors.
Celtic.
Celtic.
Okay.
Celtic.
Right, okay. Okay. Okay, number six, final one. So GlaxoSmithKline ties to church, history, and China, amongst others.
We've talked about that some already, but the thing about them is that they have a special inside track with the British Crown and with the whole history of kind of colonial-based genocide all over the world. They were doing those experimental hospitals, not just Canada among the natives, but South Africa, all over Africa, all over England, slum children, the whole bit. So it's that long tradition of in-house genocide, right?
Yeah, it seems very likely to me that, you know, they have these corporate entities for the rank and file, for the public to see, but there's a completely different network that operates in the shadows, that, you know, has no borders or boundaries with regards to corporations or nation states or, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's nation states like religions are for the consumption of the masses of the slave population who have to stay divided and fighting each other, right? That's how the few rule the many. But it begins to break down in times like this, right? People can see through it. But again, as we've talked about so much, where's the alternative for people, right? If they don't have the alternative, they slip back into the old automatically, even if they're mentally against it. They're still part of it. They got to break energetically. And you do that into a new energy system, like the, you know, hegemonicon, our own hegemonicon, right? Group mind.
Yeah, and it's incremental, isn't it? You know, you can pull it right back to not paying taxes, you know, or not even taking oblongs of paper with the queen on, right? You know, don't involve yourself in that whole energy flow power structure system. You know, it's almost like it's almost like religion in a way. You know, how fervent are you to
right. Well, Yeah, and I mean, the neat thing is that you can take action wherever you are. And so, you know, one message to people in England who are listening to this is go down to Middlesex, go to the GSK headquarters. If you're going to have a protest, do it right there, folks, and go in. You can lawfully use our warrants.
Use the warrants.
You know, murderbydecree.com under ITCCS updates, January 15th. You run off the PDFs, and you can use the warrant to make arrests at anyone who works for that corporation.
Deputize the local police, and in you go.
Yep. And I know people in Cornwall are doing that. They've been using our warrants to shut down pharmacies that are distributing the killer COVID drug.
Southwest England, Cornwall here.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's just a matter of doing now. We know what to do. We know what the problem is. It's that element of will and courage that we need to be pushing right now, you know.
And as well as Glaxo and the big pharma ones, where's the head office similarly for Vanguard and BlackRock? Is that USA?
US for now. But again, like that might be their public address, but these are international networks of power, so it's not based anywhere, really. It's kind of like this the hidden thing. It's like, do you ever really see the people pulling the strings? Well, I don't think so. But they're protected by like a mafia don, by layers of protection, including in people's minds, right?
From your perspective, who's teetering on the brink the most? The churches? The royals, the corporations, who's likely to crumble, collapse first?
Well, they're all part of the same thing, and they're mutually dependent on each other, which is why, you know, the governments protect the churches brainwash people for the state and help big pharma by providing children in their experiments, and corporatocracy promises prosperity and protection to anybody who serves it, right? So, I mean, thing, you know, we're evolving towards the Omnicorp. I call it in my Land of Liberty novel, I call it Omnicorp. Because in the future, you know, there's the Omnicorporation and then there's the people and that's it. I mean, though, you know, governments, all these other things fall away, right? They're ultimately not needed as this concentration of wealth and power continues, right?
Made me think of the movie Blade Runner, where you got the you know, the corporate overlords, and then you got the underclass, and that sort of altitude of skyscraper buildings very much designates who's who in the corporate, plus the tech, you know, the DARPA AI situation too.
Well, we're in it now. That's the point. We're in it, and they're using their technology to befuddle everybody. And we got to get our minds out of their network, right? That's the first step.
Yeah, it's a real it's a cold turkey, isn't it? You know, people's lives are so intricately involved with, in inverted commas, the enemy. It's we've talked about it many times. It's a real break away, isn't it? Okay.
Well, this is good. I appreciate that. I really wanted to get this news about what the Anglican Church is demanding to their own people now, because it's another light on the whole agenda. And again, Canada being used as the testing ground, right?
Yeah. Hey, one thing I meant to ask you on the last one, but maybe I can now. We've got a couple of minutes. ATMs, I think you call them over there. We call them cash point machines. They're, in Australia and certain parts of the world, they're all being shut down now so that the digital economy can come into play wholesale. Is that where you are? How's the cash?
They're doing it selectively in Canada. So that's happened occasionally. The real testing ground is on the West Coast. The Chinese have moved into it in a big way. And so that's where you see a lot of the ATMs being shut down. Don't forget, we're always being experimented on. So it's right. A way to test people's reactions. To see, you know, to gradually turn up the temperature on the boiling frog in the water, right?
Right. Also, the toe in the water.
Yeah, that's where
they put the toe in the water. They give it a test, and they see the public response.
Right.
If there's big pushback, then they're, you know, two steps forwards, one steps back. You know, back, test the water, right?
Yeah. Well, and generally, don't forget too that the purpose of them crashing an economy is so that the bigger corporation can gobble it up cheaper. And you know, you saw that all over. For years when I worked in the downtown part of Vancouver as a street minister, you know, the police are allowing crime to break out everywhere because it and drug dealing literally right on the front steps of the police station, because what that does is drive down the property values. The big Chinese overseas developers come in and buy it up cheap, and the police help them do that, right? So, I mean, it's the same old game, right?
Right. Long-term financial planning and strategy, for sure.
Right.
Yeah. And with the Anglican Church and the injections, the lethal injections, that coercive element, it's right there in the vocab and the terminology of the Nuremberg Code, right? So it's very, very easy to make arrests and use these arrest warrants using the Nuremberg Code as a reference, right? I mean, everybody's heard of the Nuremberg trials and the Nuremberg Code. And when it says in the Nuremberg, we got 381 MPs over here, members of parliament, that have signed an act. I think there was two. There was one in last summer 2021 and December, end of the year 2021, where they signed off a coercive act of parliament so that people's incomes were going to be curtailed and stopped unless they had this very dangerous injection, where all the statistics, you know, Pfizer's really on the back foot with the stats, right? There's all these side effects that have just been published. You know, this is very exciting, right, Kev? We're making huge inroads here.
Well, don't forget, ultimately, it's the same old question. Their oath of allegiance is to Queen Elizabeth and her descendants. And legally, they can operate only within that framework. So we say that's why we need to create our own framework over here, you know, with the Republic. And when we create that initiative ourselves, it doesn't really matter what they do anymore. We create the new impetus, and they have to follow it, right? And that's a hard thing for people to get their minds around. But the more you do it, the more you live in that, you know, exercise in that new muscle in your mind, the more it becomes a reality. And we're seeing that happen. That's what I find is the really exciting part, is that people are creating their own alternative, right?
Playing the pipes to their tune, to our tune. They have to react to our our pipes.
That's what Sun Tzu says in the Art of War. You set the whoever sets the terrain of battle will win, no matter how small they are.
Yeah, fight the battle on your own turf, right?
Right, always. Never react.
right. Okay, let's call it quits here, shall we, come?
Thank you, Owen. Murderbydecree.com, everyone. Thanks so much.
Yeah, wow. That information about the mush hole and the residential death camps for children, murderbydecree.com and the book.
It's all there. Of course.
400 That's pages right. of testimony, right?
Documents, the whole bit. Yep.
Yeah. Is it flying off Thanks, the shelf? Are you shifting more copies these days than ever before?
It went up for a while. Now it's down again, but every time this book, Murder by Decree, with all the evidence, every library in Canada it's ever gone in, it's disappeared from. And then the librarians pretend they don't know why. And that's why we put it online. But, you know, it's a banned book in Canada because it's the answer to the cover-up, the Truth and Reconciliation cover-up that the government and the churches, the criminals investigating themselves. It's all the evidence that they banned and censored. So it's invaluable. We're trying to get it into schools and into the curriculums and everything. So it's an uphill battle, but got to do it, right?
And I'm sure I know the answer. It's almost a rhetorical question. No one was arrested for the mass murder of all these children.
A few people in the early years went to trial for rape, and they were out after about 3 or 4 years. They were never tried for any capital crime. Over 60,000 deaths. At least no one's ever gone to trial for a death, except in our court trial in Europe.
Right.
Yeah, that's the only time it's ever been convicted.
And, you know, perhaps it's perhaps they want to stay off the radar, so to speak. But the common law crowd in Cornwall, just the peninsula down from here, can you tell us anything about those guys? They sound like they're pretty dynamic.
Well, I think the best thing is for them to tell you themselves, and we could do an interview with them or something. I don't want to speak for them. I also don't know enough about them to say, but I do know they've taken our warrants and are acting on them. They've been doing common law education, and you know, they're not giving up. So that's really encouraging.
Yeah, there's a good vibe in Cornwall. They've got a very independent vibe to them down there. It's good on them. If they're watching, you know, hats off to Cornwall. Okay, cheers, Kev. All the best. Chat next week.
Thanks so much. Take care. Thanks so much. Okay.